welcome to Nature Finds a Way, a biology pop culture podcast where we nerd out about biology facts and fiction in some of our favorite books, movies, and TV shows.
I'm Lindsay, and she's Sarah, and we are marine biologists in recovery, which is going to help us a lot this week.
Indeed.
Because we are talking about one of our favorite YA books, Troubling a Star by Madeline L'Engle. Troubling Star was published in 1994. It is the last of the Austen Family Chronicles, the fifth book, which is sad for me because we never get to find out if what happens to Vicky and Adam. And I have a serious Adam problem, which might come up later.
So, brief synopsis of this book. Like Lindsay said, it came out in 1994, and the main character is a girl named Vicky who's like 14?
16 in this book.
She's 16, and she has an older brother, and her older brother has a friend whom she's not secretly in love with named Adam, and at the beginning of the book...
Over the summer. It's a whole other book.
I know.
Yeah.
You should read that one first. But anyways. Yeah, so she meets Adam's eccentric aunt.
Great aunt.
Yes, eccentric great aunt named Serena, and they form a bond, and Vicky ends up... studying in her attic and meeting her, like, house servant-y people, and they sort of have this weird, but quite cute and nice relationship.
Yeah.
And then Adam, who is a marine biology student, is going to Antarctica because he has all the money in the world.
He got a grant.
I know he got a grant, but still.
Hey, we know a scientist who went to Antarctica twice on
That's
grants,
true.
Okay?
That's
it
true.
Actually happens.
I know. I'm just jealous.
I know.
And so Aunt Serena sends Vicky on a trip to South America and Antarctica where she will...
She has all the money.
She does have all the money. So yeah, so she sends Vicky, it's like her birthday gift.
Christmas?
Birthday.
After knowing her for 2 months.
Yeah. It's a little random.
I need a crazy aunt.
No kidding. We all need crazy aunts. So she goes on this Antarctica trip and... There are some fictional geopolitical happenings sort of based in real life. So there's a South American country called...
Vespugia? I don't know. I was called Vespugia.
Yeah, I think it's Vespugia because it's like Amerigo de Vespugi, the explorer guy?
Maybe.
Sure.
Yeah, it's in Swoopy Telling Planet.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just a... It's a random small South American country that's recently been taken over by a dictator. And then there's also a fictional former Soviet country called...
Latvia.
With a Z. Yes. And one of the fellow passengers on the boat is a dashing prince.
Mm-hmm.
Prince Otto of Latvia. And there's political goings on between those countries and American drug... dealers primarily, and just like sketchy characters, and Vicky ends up getting trapped on an iceberg, which is pretty scary, and then she gets rescued, and then everything's fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Adam's there,
Adam helps rescue her, also Aunt Serena's cook, who is from the Falkland Islands, and his brother, who was also from Falkland Islands, obviously. And, like, still, so his brother still lives in Falkland Islands. And, yeah. Like, the plot is really important, and I found it on rereading, because I hadn't read it for a million years, like, since around when it first came out. I'd, like, forgotten what the plot resolution was, and, like, so the plot is pretty engaging. Like, it's a cool mystery. But we're not really here to talk about the plot.
No, because a lot of the stuff that they do, especially once they get to Antarctica, is look at the things that you go to Antarctica for.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. So, yeah, so we wanted to talk about the biology because, I mean, I think the reason that I was given this book, because I didn't have any of the other books in the series. Like, I had the other Madeline L'Engle...
Wrinkle in Time,
and that trilogy. And then somebody gave me this book as a gift...
Because they couldn't give you a trip to Antarctica?
Probably. It was one of my, either my actual great aunt or my, like, mom's best friend from when they were tiny, who's basically my aunt. They were, like, the givers of books. And so, yeah, like, the cover is an iceberg, basically.
Yeah.
And it's about, like, Antarctica. And so, yeah, they gave me this book. Not really realizing, probably, that either that I didn't have the other books or that it also doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter. They do enough introduction. You just don't understand the real feelings.
Yeah, and so I have since read all of them. Yeah. But, yeah, so that was my introduction to the book.
Yeah, so I read A Wrinkle in Time in grade 6?
Yeah.
I don't know, I had the same teacher and the same people in my classes for 6 and 7, so it's all a jumble.
When you were 12-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is a good time.
And obviously loved it, and it was, like, life-changing.
Yeah.
Because it was, after reading fantasy, like, Hobbit and stuff, but this is the one that's actually about a girl.
Yeah, well, and it turned you, like, into a proper reader.
Yes, also true. So then we went, I think I got the other four. Well, it's technically it's 5 series.
Yeah.
Just in the time series now. But anyway, so we got those ones, and then we were just looking at all the ones that were there, and my mom was like, look, this one has a dolphin on it.
Mm.
And, you know, I was a 12-year-old girl. Loved dolphins.
I know, I'm surprised that I was never given that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird.
So I think we got both The Arm of the Starfish and Ring of Endless Light, like, on the first trip to buy Madeline Lingle books.
Right.
Because they were both, and that was at that time where my parents were like, hey, marine biology would be a great thing for you to work towards, because you're 12, and, you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sure.
Anyway. I read all of them, and I still have them all, and Sarah had to borrow my copy of Troubling a Star, which fell in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And
it's still very readable. It only takes up slightly more space. Just some of the pages are wrinkly.
It's better than Acceptable Time, which I can't read because I spilled juice on it.
Oh, no.
It smells. Anyway, it was a long tangent story. Ring of Endless Light actually changed my life. I couldn't go to sleep after I read it the first time. I read it constantly.
Yeah.
After I read Troubling a Star, I went back and read a bunch of books.
Nice.
Including both Arm of the Starfish and Ring of Endless Light.
Yeah.
But so I read Troubling a Star after that and was satisfied but very dissatisfied.
Yeah. I know, because
there's very little Adam in it.
Yeah, there's not very much Adam in this. You just get the sense that she, as a 16-year-old, was pining after this, like, 19-year-old boy? 18?
Yeah, he had already been in Berkeley 1 year.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, 19.
Yeah, like, 19-year-old boy. But, like, he's also very good about it. And, yeah, he's very serious about his school, and he's very, like, doesn't try to, like, take advantage. Like, there's nothing weird going on.
No, he's
like,
very old-fashioned.
He's very old-fashioned with her, so.
Which is saying something, because everyone in this book is old-fashioned.
Yes. Yeah, we were trying to figure out, like, is it super clear about when this book takes place? But, like, it's kind of vague, but at the same time, it's definitely after the USSR breaks up, so it's, like, after 1991. It came out in 1994, so it's, like,
around there.
In there.
But it still has a lot of old-fashioned vibes in that. Is, I think, a lot to do with the way that she writes and her ideals, but also, like, it's the fifth book of a series that she wrote over, I don't know, 20 like, years?
Yeah, probably 20 probably. Years, 15, 20 years.
And so, it's hard, like,
Her
family is old-fashioned, and a lot of stuff, especially in the first ones, they're...
Yeah, they're very, like, they're not, like, scary religious, but they are definitely, like, a religious family that, like, really enjoys spending time together and sort of, like, in an anachronistic way. Like, they like, write letters and, like, go on family adventures together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is good.
Like, I remember, I haven't read The Moon by Night, which is the second one, in a really long time, but I remember a part where she talks about how Daddy always likes that Mom wears skirts.
Yeah.
And then right before they leave on their road trip, the mom goes and paints the toilet because she's never had a chance to. Which is such a weird
thing. Who paints toilets?
Which is obviously why it's still in my head, like, 20 years later.
I didn't know you could paint a toilet.
Maybe it was, those were the kinds of things that happened in the
weird
70s.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, anyway, like, even though her older brother, like, goes to MIT and stuff, that there's, like, no technology in this book.
Which is fine.
It's fine, yeah. It doesn't need it.
Technology would have ruined all of this.
Oh, yeah. Like if she could have emailed from Vespugia to, emailing in Antarctica even now is, like,
super
sketchy. But especially, yeah.
Yeah, there would have been a lot, like, Seth would have been able to email Cook.
Yeah, yeah, there would have just, like, better contact between people across the country rather than, like, you know, monthly letters.
Yeah, also in general, like, I know that the fake American South American country is
yeah.
dictatorship and all this stuff, but they were people were like reading like opening mail.
Yeah.
And all that. And not even just there, but also in
like other in Antarctica places. And like because yeah, also there's because lots of mail.
Vespugia or whatever would it's one of the people trying to take control of Antarctica, so they were still intercepting mail and
yeah.
like it was, yeah, a, it was weird a bit weird. Spy thing, but
yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. It like plot-wise, my main criticism is that, not through any fault of the character, but just in the way it was written, she's a really passive character. Like, she's just there while these things happen around her. And, like, obviously, yeah, she's stuck on an iceberg for a solid chunk of the book.
Yeah.
Like, she can't do anything about that. But at the same time, it also doesn't make for the most, like, engaging plot that she's super involved in.
Yeah, I would say
so. Like, it's realistic, but it's like almost too realistic. Mm-hmm.
The most engaging stuff is again, was we've before we tangented wildly, the stuff when they go see the animals because she's active yes. in that because
exactly
you have to be active in that
because yeah.
it's an active thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also like those are great moments, they're great encounters.
Yeah,
she has a great time, and it's a, and that part's kind of nice of it being old fashioned and written in the olden time because mm-hmm. they were the only people there.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, like, Antarctica still is not very touristy, but now, compared to 20 years ago,
yeah,
it's a lot more touristy. It's
a lot more touristy, so, like, not just people, but, like, plastic.
Yeah, yeah, like, more garbage. Like, it's way more pristine back then, so, mm-hmm. yeah, they're able to, like, her and the rest of the passengers on the boat are able to have, like, some pretty cool, like, penguin encounter. Like, they go on land a couple times and see,
yeah.
like, some really a awesome bunch of penguins. There's lots of seals,
mm-hmm. And then whales,
seabirds, and yeah, cool sure. like whale.
Kind of was assumed humpback. It was never said.
Yeah,
but it was something. I guess it could have been a minke whale.
Yeah,
but I don't Some see sort of any reason as to why it wasn't a humpback.
Yeah,
probably they were talking about whales. Fluke photos. So
yeah, oh yeah, that's true. Which it, so yeah, they talk a lot about IDing whales by the patterns on their flukes, like their tail fin, as they dive back down. And so that is, I think it's done with lots of whales, but most commonly and most famously with humpbacks, because yes. they dive really well.
Yes, you can do it with most of the big baleen whales, and they even, especially like the southern residents that are so well known,
yeah,
have killer some whales. Markings. Yeah, sorry, southern killer whales. But the same with eye patches, like once you know who they are,
yeah.
you can see them, which is the same as any whale you'd see
exactly.
all the time, and have the ability to ID.
Yeah.
But humpback whales are the most famous ones. Every tail is unique, like a fingerprint.
Mm-hmm.
And it would definitely be harder in Antarctica because their tails are way more white.
Oh, really?
Yeah, than they are here, so it's kind of like would be the opposite. We have a lot more black.
Yeah, tails. With like mostly with black with a little black with a little white and gray.
They're much more opposite than us.
Huh. Cool. Yep. Good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Camouflage, which is
nothing
probably.
To yes, nothing to do with Megalo.
No,
it's an actual
yeah, albino,
or, albino or something.
Leucistic. Yeah.
But yes, the, yeah. in general, so, yeah, their tails are.
They have like some pretty cool humpback encounters, which is like pretty believable. Maybe not specifically humpbacks, but well, yeah, probably humpacks are like the most.
Probably humpbacks. They were there in January.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, probably yeah. pretty likely.
But yeah, definitely the researchers on the boat mm-hmm. waiting to get the whales to fluke and those
yeah.
not fluking. I've had some extreme experiences of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Waiting for the animals to behave.
Yeah. And
they don't.
Gray whales are actually the worst because they are identified by the ridges on their back. Oh. So when you're getting official photographs for ID for cataloging, you have to get the right side and the left side and then the fluke. So when you're sitting on the boat with the person taking the photos, but you don't have to take the photos,
mm-hmm.
and you're just sitting there. It is the most boring. This is why I don't like gray whales.
But also, like, what? Like, to have to get the right and the left side.
Yes, I know.
Like, it's so hard.
It's so hard. And then you're out there, and you're sitting on the back of the boat, and you're like, so bored, and I'm hungry, and I'm
gonna be a little sick.
I haven't been on land in, like, 4 days, and I'm gonna be a little bit sick, and then you lean over to get your breath, and then a gray whale breathes on you, and there's nothing worse in the world than whale snot.
Yeah, because as we spoke about in our first episode, when whales breathe out, it is not water, but they do have whale breath,
yes.
and it is snotty.
It is very snotty. and it's awful. Yeah. Anyway,
gross.
But that is my story about trying to get humpbacks to fluke.
Do you want to tell us about penguins?
I do. I'm not going to tell you, like, a lot about penguins, because if you want to know, the internet exists.
Yeah.
But a lot of stuff about penguins in this book is based on that they can't fly.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Very true.
Their bodies, their bones are denser. If you don't know, all birds, have hollow bones, which is why they're light.
Yeah, they're so like a honeycomb sort of lattice. Like, they can fly. Yeah, and they don't really have marrow in the same way that we do.
No, and it's all, like, they have all sorts of other crazy stuff, but, like, if you look at most birds, like small birds, they weigh like 2 pounds.
Well, even so, I used to work with the largest species of parrot in the world, which is a hyacinth macaw, and they're like the tallest. And so they're like, I don't know, how tall is this?
2.5 feet? I'm measuring you in Bailey's.
Okay, yeah. No, like 2 feet.
Yeah,
two to 2.5 feet, like kind of including their tail, and they weigh like 1.5 kilos. Like, they're shockingly light, and they have a giant beak.
Yeah.
So, like,
so the beak is, like, a large part of their weight.
Like, super light.
Yeah, super, so something like a hummingbird weighs, like, what, 20 milligrams or something?
I don't know, I just made that up. But no, yeah, like, birds are exceptionally light.
Exceptionally light. So penguins have much denser bones.
Yes.
Because they've been adapted and evolved to dive and fly underwater.
Yeah, so if they had hollow bones, they
wouldn't be able
float.
To dive. And, like, seabirds definitely have all sorts of different adaptations because there's a lot
they
of
can
seabirds,
dive.
Obviously, that can dive and also fly.
Yeah.
But penguins are just adapted because they're also adapted for all sorts of other crazy shit because they live in Antarctica.
Yeah, and, like, they're also really good at, like, sliding around on ice and, like, not hurting themselves.
Yeah.
And, like, not freezing to death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, a lot of Vicky's thing, she's a poet.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, 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 and she's like, they're birds, but they can't fly, so I don't understand. And I'm like, just study taxonomy.
Yeah, they have feathers.
Yourself.
Oh, yeah. So in this book, there's lots of questionably quality 16-year-old poetry. So, like, it's believable. So where is this one? Penguins play but do not love. Does a penguin's heart go cold when a skua flies above? A skua is a seabird that lives in Antarctica that does fly. And she says, that was terrible. Stupid. I didn't begin to say what I felt about Adam's rejection. Yeah, he rejects her, but it's all a ploy. It's fine.
Spoiler alert!
We've spoiled the whole book.
I know.
And then, this is like... Tell me, the one who sings, do angels really and truly have wings? Do they call out with a cry like a bird and then fly low to see if we've heard? When they make their energy manifest, do they put on wings to be fully dressed? And if it, and is it really true what I have heard, that if it has feathers, it is a bird?
When you read it out loud, it's
I know,
even
it's even
worse.
Because, yeah, like I said, I don't usually read the poems in the book because they're...
So, yeah, I don't really know the defining features of what makes it a bird.
Feathers. And there's something about hip joint, like how the hips join the pelvic girdle. Your favorite word. in a different way, like... So their legs go straight down, whereas, like, so birds evolved from dinosaurs and also evolved from, like, also evolved sort of at the same time as dinosaurs were, like, crocodiles, and if you look at a crocodile, their legs stick out to the sides.
Yes. Now, tell me the difference between a bird and a bat, besides that they're mammals. But they both fly.
Yes, they both fly. Birds fly, their wings are made up of their whole arm. And bats, their wings are made up of hands.
It's true.
It's really cute. So yeah, if you look at bat wings, like, their arm muscles are really, really small. Like, their arm bones, I mean, are really reduced. Like, they're kind of hardly there. And then their, like, the bones between the webbing is, like, between their fingers.
Yeah. So kind of similarly to how you look at a whale fluke.
Yes.
Not a whale, a peck fluke.
Peck, yeah.
Because you can see when you look at this how... Their bones are too.
Yeah, it's all hand bones. Yeah,
because they don't. None of them have thumbs, but you know, it's a hand. Same with a bat. So
I saw this thing, and it was birds fly by flapping their arms, and bats fly by doing jazz hands.
Oh, fantastic!
Yeah.
So another part of this whole thing that Sarah finds unrealistic is that a pun passenger brings a harp.
Yeah.
But it's not a full-size harp.
I know.
It's just a tiny, like an angel harp.
Yeah, like a lap harp.
Like the harp they use in We Are As Gods, one of my favorite episode of Buffy ever.
You just wanted to bring that up.
Yes. Yes. We also just watched it. Anyway, so the point is that she brings her harp.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's a harpist. But she also wants to see if the animals react mm-hmm. to the music. So in the book, they do. They actually, the penguins have some incredible reactions. Yeah. And, like, chicks crawl up into her lap, which there aren't supposed to be chicks in January anyway. Like, not...
Not, like, teeny tiny ones.
Yeah, they'd be, like, the horribly ugly, gross, like, multi ones.
Yeah. Yeah, they'd be, like, the same size as their parents, but fluffy and gray.
Yes. Horrible. So, yeah, so the birds all crowd around her and, like...
Are, like, obsessed.
Obsessed and, like, crawl into her lap, which is, even back when there weren't people in Antarctica, that would never happen.
No. Because no. Fear. Also, like... Penguins are cute over there.
Yes.
Over here, they're real smelly.
Real smelly. And, like, as we know from our experience with friends, then they flap their arms, you just get bruises.
Yeah. Everywhere. And also, like, if they... Because they use their mouths to explore the world around them. Not, like, in an aggressive way, but, like, ooh, what does this feel like? I use my mouth, because that I don't have any other options. And it's kind of like being grabbed repeatedly by, like, barbecue tongs.
Mm-hmm. So it would not have been pleasant.
No.
At all.
No.
So I looked up some studies to see if penguins react to music, and there is no known that study. There doesn't seem to be any studies. There is an awesome video that we'll put up in the show notes of a man singing opera and a bunch of penguins running away, which is the exact opposite of this book, but yeah. Whatever. They also sing and play the harp to elephant seals, which is very realistic, the elephant seals and penguins. Hang out together.
Yes.
In Antarctica. Yeah. That's definitely something that happens often. Again, in the book, the elephant seals react and seem to sway their heads in time with the music, which is very anthropomorphic. But there is studies that find that elephant seals can recognize rhythm, but in vocalizations of other elephant seals to recognize individuals.
Yeah.
But there is studies, mainly in captivity, that other pinniped species can keep beats. So if they play music, they will be able to pick up the beat. So,
cool.
It's more realistic than penguins, but...
Yeah, but still, confirmation bias.
Yes, and also, harps don't have beats. Like, it has, like, a beat.
Yeah,
the music.
The song has a rhythm. Yeah, but yeah, it's not in the same way as, like, a drum beat.
The drum beat.
The biggest thing is not the space issue, although, like, space on boats, especially, like... That kind of boat are like is at a premium, but it's more the temperature change. So at the beginning of the book, with her harp, they're in Vespugia, which is like insanely hot, and then they're in Antarctica, where it's like cold.
Mm-hmm.
And instruments don't like that. I mean, she does spend a lot of time tuning it, but even just like being indoors on the ship and then being outdoors,
which is interesting because they talk about the oboe.
Yeah,
the other guy couldn't bring his oboe to Antarctica because of the.
It was
weather
too cold.
And it being a mouth instrument.
Yeah.
Blow the hot air into it. But yet, the harp seemed to be
but
fun.
But he could have played it indoors.
They were living on those tents because
they were illegally camping in Antarctica.
Yeah. Because that's a thing. That
happened. They were squatting in Antarctica, basically. Right, I forgot that part.
Yeah. The other big thing always in this book, penguins aren't nice. They're not monogamous.
No.
That's a widely...
Very few animals really are.
Yeah.
Like, they are, if the circumstances are right.
Exactly. They're, like, they've been known to cheat, and they steal eggs that are left unattended, and all that kind of stuff, and they're just out there
living their best penguin life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're just trying to pass their DNA on. That's the whole point of being an animal.
Yeah, they're not trying to be nice.
They have to do. So being nice isn't going to get them anywhere, and neither is being monogamous if...
Yeah.
There's a stronger, fitter partner.
Yeah.
A little wise down.
Yep.
So, anyway.
Yep. Nice.
Penguins are nice. They are very cute when they're a little.
Yeah.
I'm never going to deny that. They are kind of awesome when they hop around.
Yeah. And, like,
and they swim.
So, I transition.
Oh, yeah!
When we saw them swimming underwater in the Galapagos.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we have never been to Antarctica.
No.
But... We have been on a similar-ish liveaboard boat in a cool, biologically protected area.
Yes.
In 2012. the two of us and our other best friend Nicole did an amazing trip. We went to Ecuador and then did a like 10-ish day liveaboard boat around the Galapagos.
Yes.
It was the best.
So aside from the massive temperature change and also all of the drug crimes.
Yes.
It was kind of similar.
Kind of the same. Yeah, our boat was a lot smaller, I think, than theirs. Like, yes. We only had, like, 16 or 18 passengers. Yeah. And like, a pretty small crew complement.
Four or five, maybe?
Four crew plus a naturalist, I think. And then, yeah, and, like, way smaller and, yeah, just, like...
But, yeah, like...
Also, it was hot, so...
Yeah, we were trying to figure out what kind of size boat that Vicky would have been on. It was, like... It, regardless of whether or not it was a redesigned icebreaker, we would have had to have icebreaker abilities.
Exactly, and yeah.
It was so probably,
it had
like
to be a lot bigger.
Three stories. It seemed like it had a full cafeteria.
Yeah, like, the cafe, like, the cafeteria thing seemed pretty fancy. Like, you could kind of have whatever you wanted at mm-hmm. meals, which was, like...
Which seems strange.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, yeah. Like, I got, like, mini cruise ship vibes from it.
Yeah, like, me, like... Probably in the 50 to 100 passenger
size boat, but
yeah,
with less people.
Probably fewer people.
They're doing all the Zodiacs and
yeah.
stuff.
I don't know.
Yeah. Like, there were definitely those kinds of sizes of boats in the Galapagos.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I know, so we went with a company called G Adventures, and then, like, Celebrity Cruises, for example, does one there that's, mm-hmm. like, 100 people.
Yeah.
And it's, like, way different vibes than what we were
on. Way different vibe. So, but the naturalist part was...
Yeah, we just had one naturalist.
We had one naturalist.
It didn't matter.
He was beautiful.
He was the best.
Yes, when I started reading this, I texted Sarah and said, "We get to talk about Kike."
Yeah.
Because, as one person put it, he was the Spanish Matthew McConaughey.
Yep, so he's pretty cute. And also, like, super smart and knew his way around everything. Like,
yep.
Yeah.
I've never been so attracted to a person telling me about the anatomy of flamingo stomachs before.
Yeah.
But I was.
Yep, it was a pretty exciting experience.
And we saw penguins, which is
how we got
transitioned into
it. It was a boat, and we saw penguins.
Yes.
Because in the Galapagos are the most northern found penguin species. The Galapagos penguin are found all the way up to the equator. Well, probably, like, they don't just, like, stop immediately
at the equator.
At the equator, but, like, because the Galapagos are basically on the equator.
Mm-hmm. But there are no penguin species in the northern hemisphere.
Yes.
Which is why those Coke commercials are wrong. Penguins and polar bears... opposite sides of the world.
Same temperature at the zoo. Otherwise,
that's it.
Yep.
Should not be together at the zoo.
And actually, there's lots of penguins, like, penguins from warmer places, like South Africa, that, like, don't like the cold. Like, need to stay inside if it's, like, below 5 degrees outside mm-hmm. Celsius.
Yep.
And people are confused. But yeah, not all penguins are from very, very cold.
Exactly. But they don't say that in this. They don't. Penguins in the Falklands.
Yeah, so they see penguins in the Falklands, and which is, like, not actually that far from Antarctica, but...
No. It's, like, New Zealand temperatures?
Yeah. Yeah, because there's penguins in New Zealand and Australia mm-hmm. as well. So we saw penguins underwater, and they're real good at swimming.
They are really good at swimming.
Yeah.
So cute.
Good times. We saw lots of other things, too. One thing I wanted to talk about, because... they're really, really cool, is at some point, Vicky sees crab-eater seals or crab seal?
Crab-eater seals.
Crab-eater seals. Like, they're officially called crab-eater seals, but I think in the book she just calls them crab seals. I can't remember. And she's like, oh, it's okay, it's just a crab-eater, crab-eater seal. Which, like, first of all, seals are, like, territorial,
mm-hmm.
and so even if they wouldn't eat a person, yeah, like, crab-eater seals are, like, pretty big, but yeah, like, they would still be pretty territorial and potentially aggressive in that way, and, like, can bite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And just be, yeah, they're, you know, like, similar to, like, a, you know, they're canids, right?
Exactly.
So.
Exactly, like, it's a seal. There's no known, like, seals don't eat humans.
No,
so
but they can still bite you and
they can still bite
push
you
around.
Same as
like a wild
kind of
dog.
Wild animal.
Yeah,
it is like a wild dog.
But yeah.
Seal. Water dogs.
But crab-eater seals, couple cool things. Most populous, like, most abundant seal species in the whole world. There's something, I don't know, last count is 75 million, which is a lot.
Which is a lot, especially considering...
Yeah, they basically live, all, like, around Antarctica. And they don't eat crabs. They eat krill, which is, like, little teeny tiny shrimpish things. that float around in the water. It's the same thing that humpbacks and other baleen whales and also like whale sharks eat. And so they eat it by filtering out. And because they have teeth rather than baleen, which is like a filtery comb thing, their teeth are kind of like, if you like quickly drew a Christmas tree, like the outline of a Christmas tree, that is the shape of their teeth. And then when they put them together, it's like a little sieve.
Yeah.
And then they eat krill.
So very cool. Getting bitten by one would
really hurt.
So, Vicky, yeah.
Don't go visit that.
But also don't get stuck on an iceberg, so.
Yeah, exactly. Like, getting stuck on an iceberg all by yourself is way worse than a seal.
Mm-hmm. I'm still a little bit responsible for that.
Oh, yeah.
She was not very on the ball.
No.
With
thinking. Thinking and communicating. And
yep.
Yeah. That's okay.
That's okay.
It all turned out okay in the end.
Because Adam was there.
They saved the day. Mostly Adam. And also Cookie. And
I'm sorry, I was just thinking about Adam.
Yeah, obviously. Good times. Yep.
Anyways,
that probably brings us to our thrilling conclusion of this week's episode. Week? We haven't decided on a schedule yet.
Nope.
We're probably going to talk about it after this.
Probably.
Awesome. You can check us out by subscribing to our podcast on your favorite podcasting app. Look for Nature Finds a Way. You could find our website at naturefindspod.com. You can also find us on social media at
naturefindspod on all of the three of them.
Instagrams and Facebooks and Twitters.
Yep. And, you know, join us. We'll have some photos and funny gifts and check out our show notes because there'll be links to fun things. There was a gif Sarah found penguins flying, and she was super confused, and it was just a BBC April Fool's joke.
From like 4 years ago. So yeah, we will put that up, because it is, they did a really good job. And I wasn't like
just confused.
I was just confused. I was like, I'm pretty like hip on the biology knowledge. Like, how did I not hear about this? And then as I Googled it, I was like, oh, yep.
Yep. That makes much more sense.
Much more sense. Yeah. Because it also, like, the, well, you'll see the gif, but it's like, oh, it's like, was there just like a really strong updraft and they like jumped really well at the beginning and then it like, and then they keep going. Just like jumpy penguins.
Exactly. Yeah. Falling was fun.
Falling, yeah, falling gracefully. Anyways.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Go read Troubling the Star, but also Ring of Endless Light.
Yeah. Or just go read a book.
Go read a book. If you're going to read Ring of Endless Light, there's some really bad biology in that, and we'll probably get to it eventually.
Probably.
But
Lindsay has to convince me to reread it again.
We'll talk about it.
We'll talk later.
On the podcast.
All right.
Okay, bye!
Bye!